Hello, humans, and welcome back to some more bonus audio face. We have part two of the Radiohead bonus episode because I didn't want to fry Dan's camera. All reliable. The previous episode took way too much out of Dan's camera, so we had to wait to do all the solo works because almost every single one of the band members, minus Colin, has released some type of solo material of themselves, so we need to go in and go zoom it.
And the... as we'll talk about, we did it in kind of a weird way, but a way that made sense for this use case, where we talked about Radiohead's like discography without talking about their solo work, because especially in their later years, their solo works influenced their discography.
100%.
But we're taking the solo works into their separate timeline, and then we'll kind of talk about those Radiohead band influences proper as we go through them. But yeah, this is part two. You know what this is. You know what the podcast this is. I'm not even doing any plugs. Let's just go right into it.
Yeah. So we'll start with Philip Selway, drummer for Radiohead. He's released some solo works throughout the years, kind of lesser known compared to the rest of the band, but it's a little understated, but there's still some good stuff in there. And it shows him as a musician and stuff, how well-rounded he is himself, and I think he's a very, very underrated drummer, but more on that later. His first album he released in 2010 called Familial, and it's all like acoustic record, and there's a lot of good stuff in here, actually. Like, I haven't listened to this since high school, so it's been a long time.
Yeah.
So I forgot about it, but it's only 10 songs, 32 minutes long, so it's pretty short for an album release. But it's good. It's good to hear him kind of branch out and do some different stuff. Hear his voice a little bit too, which is nice. I really like the song "A Simple Life," which is maybe like the third or fourth song.
Leave and disappear into the night. We'll turn out the lights. We just want a simple life. We'll turn out the lights. Please turn out the lights.
Really like with it, the voice, everything on there. But he did some soundtrack thing that was in 2017, I believe. Let Me Go, original soundtrack. I don't really know much about it because I haven't really listened to it or anything. It's a soundtrack if they're harder, depending on it. But another fun thing is he did do him and Johnny did part of a Harry Potter soundtrack in one of the films where The Goblet of Fire, where they were part of the band that was playing at like the dance thing in Harry Potter. And there's a scene of Johnny Gooden in all like goth makeup and stuff playing, and Phil's doing the drums.
Yeah, it also featured, in addition to Johnny Gooden and Phil Selway, Radiohead, Pulped, Jarvis Crocker, and Steve McKay as part of the Britpop wizard supergroup Weird Sisters.
Yes.
And they were all gothy, and they were in Goblet of Fire.
All super goth. It's hilarious seeing Johnny with eyeliner and Phil in the background. Like, just, it's really funny.
In the natural habitat, truly.
Right. For those Deep State fans that know that, you're real ones. If not, then go look. It's a little fun Easter egg in that. I remember seeing that a while ago. I'm like, oh, wait. But didn't realize that. It's funny.
Yeah. Phil, so I was just listening to A Simple Life as I'm kind of getting into this. I love how we'll get into this theme more broadly, but each band member of Radiohead really has like a puzzle piece of the band that they
100%.
Really have with them, 100%. They hold with them, and they really bring them together. It's amazing how like Phil Selway's solo work sounds particularly like a slice of Radiohead, like a particular part of it, just done to its utmost extreme. Also, the guy on the front of the cover looks like a taller Tyrion Lannister.
Right. There, right.
Also, there's a thing my computer does where it's like half of it's the full interface and half of it's one program.
That's really weird.
But anyways, that's essentially Philip Selway stuff.
Yeah.
Ed O'Brien.
Ed O'Brien, who released his solo album EOB last year.
Oh, he released it under EOB, but the project was called Earth.
Exactly. The project was called Earth. Release, which we did review on Audio Face. I really, really like this album.
And this was Ed O'Brien's essentially first solo work in as many years as he's been doing Radiohead and has been in a musician, essentially. I think he's done like a couple of songs like here or there.
He did
a long
like
time
Santa
ago.
Teresa a few years ago and some other stuff, but really like Earth is like his first thing that he did just by himself.
Yeah.
I mean, actually, Colin helped with the bass line on Brazil, which is Brasil, which is my favorite track on the album by far. I love about halfway through it transitions to this groovy dance beat and everything. really nice to really isolate his voice because I love Ed's vocals with Radiohead and I love his voice in general. But he said that when he was making it, he said it's almost like a rebirthing of himself where he's like, well, I can sit back, have my family over here in Brazil and really make different music, different things, and trying to explore more creative different sides as well as the work with Radiohead themselves.
Right.
So
my favorite from this was Banksters. Because it was almost like a Hail to the Feverish sort of
comeback.
And where did all the money go in there?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like a fun sort of like guitar messing with the beat in the background thing. It feels, yeah, it feels like a lot of Radiohead. Of course, you're missing some of those bits, but it doesn't feel like, oh, this song is lacking anything. It's just Ed O'Brien's really going there and it really sounds good. Yeah, we definitely talked much more about that in a previous full-on episode of Audio Face. I don't remember
full
the exact
review
one,
of it.
But like,
yeah,
there aren't many things in this case you can actually go back to our full review, so definitely check that out.
Yes, definitely do that.
In fact, in a couple seconds, I can just search it up real quick and figure out where we talked about that.
Yeah. But Colin Greenwood.
138.
All right, episode 138. Go back to 138 where we do our full review of EOB's Earth. You can get a whole sense of what we said with Ed, going back to stuff with Radiohead and his sound then. And we even contribute that as well, saying how that kind of goes back and forth within the sound of Radiohead. And he has a really big part in that band. Everybody, you can't have it. You can't have one missing member. There's no way everybody fits together in that whole group. Colin has never released any solo work. He says, last I heard, maybe about 2 years ago, 3 years ago, he said he is not planning on doing anything anytime soon.
Yeah.
He has contributed to other solo works. He did do stuff with EOB on Brazil. He did stuff with his brother Johnny on Johnny's release of Body Song and a couple other tracks and stuff with Johnny as well. I think he did one thing with Janoon, but I may be wrong with that. So he's the only member that he said that's... He says that it takes too much out of him. He really spends time with his family doing other interests and stuff, which then help him release and kind of let go and then get back to that creative side, which I understand that as well because I like having other interests and stuff as well instead of just focusing on one thing, which is very difficult to do because you kind of play yourself out. What does it mean to play ourselves out?
I mean, like, weird part of the topic. I mean, I do that in the sense where, like, I have a bunch of different podcast because like if I did any one of them it would tire me out, but then there's
exactly.
Like the whole thing of podcast creation, which is a meta thing, can exhaust me from time to time. I have like breaks from that, but it's that like you dip away from the process and then come back to it to some extent to keep yourself moving fresh in it. I
yes.
totally feel that.
And then
not to make this yet another podcast about my break.
Right. Moving on, we have Johnny Greenwood, which he has released multitudes of solo work. He's done a lot of soundtracks, a lot of different solo projects where a lot. His first thing he did was in 03 called Body Song, where he had a track called Convergence, which he did use on There Will Be Blood soundtrack, where it's this whole like symphony theme of different instruments all layering over each other, all hectic, all offbeat on purpose. And this is the one that R Word Friend from MF Doom. That's the thing he sampled, where it was all the drums and the.
Oh.
That's Body Song.
Oh.
So Body Song was used. That's at the later part. That's from that. Later on, he did.
But that wasn't on the There Will Be Blood soundtrack.
He did part of it on There Will Be Blood, and that's actually why for There Will Be Blood he wasn't allowed to be nominated for an Oscars because he had Convergence on there, which he released for part of Norwegian Wood soundtrack in 03. So he technically couldn't be part of it, which is a bullshit reason, but whatever. And then going into There Will Be Blood, his first real, recognized work and stuff of, wow, look at this artist, like award-winning film, bunch of stuff of Paul Thomas Anderson, fantastic. You have where I talked about it before in, I think, a previous podcast or stuff, Audio Vades, maybe a few years ago, where I said the soundtrack almost acts like a third character, right? Like a third scene.
When you're watching the film, the soundtrack acts as the third.
There Will Be Blood and Phantom Thread, more Phantom Thread in a little bit, definitely do that, where without the soundtrack, the film is not going to be nearly as incredible as it is. It has such a profound effect on the film itself that it's one cannot exist without the other. There's no way.
Yeah.
So like for There Will Be Blood, you have like Future Markets, Prospectors Arrive, which is beautiful with the Aunt Martineau in the background. She did some live performances playing the Aunt Martineau in the with the LCO, the London Contemporary Orchestra, playing There Will Be Blood in the background, which is really cool. Within There Will Be Blood, you get to see more of that string sections of stuff that he did use into Radiohead, because that's around in Rainbow's time, and then going to the King of Limbs, that's where you start to get all these different French horns and stuff around that era. So you can hear all those influences of Johnny's classical music training and stuff get into Radiohead itself. And within that broadening, he says he loves doing solo work. He loves doing different things where he can just be himself and really explore his creative side into that. Moving on, you have Phantom Thread, which we both watched as an early premiere. I really, really liked that film a lot. And to me, it's one of his best solo works because it is, as I said, like, as I alluded to earlier, of that like third character. So within this film, that's even more prevalent in Phantom Thread.
Like Phantom Thread to its own has its own sort of like theme, if you will.
Yes.
This like sort of piano key thing that plays through like the beginning of the film. It plays through the relationship that's kind of the center of the film between the main character and that sort of like those two people. It gets adapted and adjusted through different parts of the film based on the tone of the characters. Is it like a whimsical moment? Is it a darker, more like serious moment that adapts with it? And that's why I said it really becomes a character in the film.
Don't butter your toast too loud.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's that. So those are kind of his like contemporary things. Stuff he's done as well, which I'll kind of, I'll just kind of go do a little quick hits theme because I could have a whole podcast itself on just Johnny's solo work and how much I love it, how much of influence it has on Radiohead. You have Junoon, which is a film that he did with a Paul Thomas Anderson film about an Indian band along with an Israeli artist that came on along with it. And you have some beautiful tracks where he says, are you ready for some... like Johnny tweeted once, so he went on the Colbert show and they play, he's like, y'all aren't ready for these Muslim funky beats. And literally that's what it is. It's like this different, completely different project that he's done where he plays bass. There's a song called Who, H-U. I don't understand because it's in half in Arabic, half in Hebrew. So I have no, like, it's really hard to kind of have an English translation for a lot of it. For what it is, and you can really get a hint of how well-rounded of a musician he is to get a sense of that. And the last thing on him, he's done his own like guitar works where he's done like covered Steve Reich's Electric Counterpoint. He's done other stuff of his own, which have directly influenced the Moonshaped Pool's guitar work. So like the present tense, the loop, when he plays a live show, the loop is directly from a piece that he did himself called Loop and other things that he did with the London Contemporary Orchestra. Maybe about 2 to 3 years before Moonshaped Pool was made, he was doing that solo work to explore different variations that you can do on the guitar, because he says that a guitar can kind of get boring for him, but he's trying different loop techniques and stuff to make it sound unique and different. And you can really, really hear that during the Moonshaped Pool tour for sure. So it's like all over the place for Johnny.
Yeah. All three of them, before we jump into Tom York, like the bunch of them, they have sort of used the Radiohead off breaks to explore themselves as individuals musically in whatever kind of part they are at. And they usually kind of bring that mm-hmm. together once they do these Radiohead albums. So like, you started to notice, especially after In Rainbows, maybe a little bit less so with King of Limbs, but I felt it at least starting with King of Limbs, but almost a more like cinematic scope to the era of the song 100%. They were doing. Like even through the From the Basement session, something felt a little bit more different. Something felt a little bit more like...
lively, and it felt really
creative. Like it had some sort of like an effect to it. I'm not doing the best job of explaining it, but there was like a deeper level of like cinematic nature to me King of Limbs versus In Rainbows, and then a Moonshaped Pool versus all of them.
Definitely.
It just feels like, you know, there's an extra production aura to
it. Yeah, before you jump to Tom, the thing too that's important with Johnny is his relationship with Paul Thomas Anderson, because he directed Daydreaming, the video for that. They did the sessions of Tom and Johnny shot in Paul Thomas Anderson's backyard and stuff, and all that creative things of them kind of exploring different filmmaking stuff and things together helps Radiohead itself as well.
Yeah. And like the reason we ordered this all, because like the solo works that each of the Radiohead artists have done is not like ranking one above the other, but like as the front person, Tom York, it's a point of attention.
To me, what it is it's showing the amount of influence that each one has. Because to me, Johnny has a big load of influence, but the most influence are going to be Tom York and Nigel Godrich. They're going to have the most influence out of all, because when you get to Atoms for Peace or other groups, which we'll get to in a second, you'll say they sound Radiohead-y. Yeah. Because of how much influence they have. And I always allude to that point. Even as though all the rest of them have all these other... Because again, you cannot have Radiohead without all of them together, or else it's just a solo work of one or the other, or it's just a side project of these two compared. Like, you have to have them all together, because everybody voices their own things. They all come to an agreement onto something, which is pretty difficult to do for 5 members of a band.
Yeah.
Secondly, 6 and 7 members even, when it gets to the full all of them. So
take notes, Brockhampton.
Deadass.
So let's jump into Thom Yorkies.
Thomas Thorkies.
With The Eraser. 9 songs, 41 minutes long from 2006. This is where you get Thom York as a singer as well, but you also get Thom York sort of like feel for eclectic synthesizers and weird timings.
In 06, this is kind of like the start of a lot of different styles of electronic music in the UK. You have more garage influences, you have old dubstep, you have like Burial coming out with records, which Burial just did that Fortet and Thom York song last year. And you can hear a lot of those influences within The Eraser, within Tom and Nigel's work within here. For sure, because Tom loves doing, like, going to dance things. He did stuff with Boiler Room and other things to get a lot of those electronic influences. And this is the first full album. You can really hear that. The Eraser, that track, starts off the synth keyboard, synth drums in the background going on. And it's just beautiful, beautiful track to open it off. Synth boop boops that I like to call towards the end, and you have that throughout the album of him experimenting with that. And that sound, you could actually hear it a little bit in some of Radiohead's B-sides of like Worry War and the original version of Fog and Amazing Sounds and other of these B-sides that you can hear that dawning of that in the early 2000s, and then the full like realization of that style of music in The Eraser and in Amina and other projects, which we'll talk to in a bit. You have The Clock, which is a hilarious song. You have Atoms for Peace, which is one of my favorite Thom Yorke solo project songs, where Bam and I watched him live and we were flying saucer eyes and stuff, and I want to eat your artichoke heart. There's a lot of like play on word lyrics throughout this. It's really him explaining it, like exploring his own emotions and feelings and stuff.
Yeah. Thom Yorke, the thing I've noticed that what Thom Yorke and Damon Albarn both have in common, which I'd love to see a song with them together do, is that they have a similar approach to songwriting, which is take a lot of words that have the meaning, jumble them up, and just like croon it a little bit.
Yeah.
And it like fashions hit after hit after hit.
Mm-hmm.
Feel Good Inc. is both like an enormously profound song and a bunch of gibberish.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
It's like,
but then you have, but then the funny thing on The Eraser is you have Hair Down Hill towards the end, which Hair Down Hill is about one of those journalists protesting the Iraq War who was mysteriously found dead on Hair Down Hill. Like, that whole song is basically about like that entire incident, because obviously Thom is very political. He's very about like protesting Iraq. He was really against the administration at the time of Tony Blair and stuff, and the Conservative Party at the
It was like about he wrote a song about David Kelly, who was a British weapons
expert.
Thank
you.
Who told a reporter that the British government had falsely identified weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, which was just getting to the point of there are no weapons of mass destruction.
Exactly.
Bush is lying about this. He brought a bunch of United States allies into this. And like, yeah, it is. I mean, like, there's aspects of that in it. There's little aspects of like, it seems like a bullying story within there with Thom Yorke as well.
There's so much, but like within
really
the lyrics, Thom Yorke has it where he's like, there's one thing that's always said.
It's
like, don't ask me, ask the ministry. Which is such like a really powerful thing going on, and just talks about the whole incident of basically all the bullshit's going on, but makes it in this gorgeous bass line, super simple bass line, and really complicated synth drums and just deep synthesized in the background of it. And seeing it live, you could still feel the emotion he has of all the injustice and shit that he sees, and he's like, tries to speak up against and gets to out to more people as much as he can.
Even though live, it's a lot more of like a faster paced song. It's even, you could almost like mistake it as upbeat, but it's like very dark.
It's very, very dark, yes.
My favorite Thom Yorke song is here. It's Black Swan.
With your fingers you can touch me.
Swan.
Hands like, this is my favorite.
Up.
Yeah.
Fucked up.
I love the way he does, like, it's sort of like a soft, like, matter of fact, oh, by the way, this is fucked up. Yeah. It's a song about, like, not belonging in a place, has to do with, like, bullying, all these different things. I think it's just, like, Thom Yorke at his most Thom Yorke and raw, but it's also, like, very approachable. It's, like, it's a groovy tune, but it's still, like, very dark. We're getting a sort of, like, a pattern with songs that I really like a lot. But, I love Black Swan. It was one of my favorite. When I was just learning about Thom Yorke's solo work, I think this would have been when we were in early parts of high school.
Okay, yeah. That's when I told you about that stuff.
Yeah.
It was maybe freshman year of
freshman
high school.
Because I remember the teacher's class in which this was happening.
Because I was listening to The Eraser. You're like, oh, I didn't know Thom did solo work. And I was like, oh, yeah. Here's the Eraser, dog.
Yes.
Here's the goods. And you're like, I remember you just sitting there like, oh my God. Yeah, because that's why I give you the record. And you're like, oh my God. I was like, dude, just wait.
Love Black Swan. And yeah, that was the start of a lot of great things, because Yes. Atoms for Peace, one of the songs that was on that Eraser album, ended up being the kind of like starting for a super group that Tom York created. Along with, let me run down this beautiful murderer's row here. Flea, the bassist of the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Nigel Godrich on synthesizers and keyboards. Joey Waronker of Beck and REM as a percussionist. And Mara Refusco, who is also doing the percussions as well.
Yes.
And so they formed a super group together. And it was originally formed just so they could make the Eraser work live, because Tom York couldn't do it live
and
all by himself.
So in like 2010, so he made the Eraser. He didn't tour the Eraser, because right the year after that, and Rainbows came out, and he did that.
Yeah.
He toured for about a year and a half, 2 years. But then in about 2009, he started to do different solo ones, or actually Johnny came on board and did some like little small shows and stuff along with Tom to help try to promote the solo work. And then he had Flea and all those other guys come on to in like 2010 to do one festival just to kind of see if they could do how the Eraser would sound live, because there's so much percussion, there's so much synth and other stuff, and they're able to hit it off and they really like doing it. So they said, you know what, let's make a record and do that. And they actually were playing a lot of older Radiohead songs. Like they played Paper Bag Rider from my favorite, Calm Lag, from that album, because they never played it as Radiohead live, but they played it as Atoms for Peace, which is interesting because of all the synth work and stuff. It doesn't really work as like a live Radiohead song. It's kind of odd, but for Atoms for Peace setting, it works. They also have like a bunch of other things that they did, but they released Amok.
Yeah,
in Amok, 2013,
9 songs, 45 minutes long. I don't think there's a better alternative like electronic album than this. Front to bottom, everything's perfect. Not a single problem with this.
Hey, like this would break our arbitrary scale. Like if this came out in the times of Audio Face,
actually,
it's just like it's unbelievable.
We didn't put this on 50 of the 10s, I don't think.
I had as honorable mention, I believe, or I did it in there. It's hard because of a bunch of other stuff that was out as well.
And I think it was kind of like a weird, like, it was weird to kind of categorize this. Because on the one hand, this was like kind of like Tom York kind of thing.
It was, so here's the thing where I got to say, it sounds very Radiohead-y. That's the influence that Tom and Nigel have over the sound of Radiohead. Because Nigel has a lot of production sounds and stuff where he loves synthesizer, he loves listening to Burial, Fortet, a bunch of these other electronic bands and dubstep creators, or early dubstep creators, that really shape the sound of really their 20s and 30s to have that creative sound that then goes into Amok and later on Radiohead. So example, like the beginning, you have Before Your Very Eyes that starts off and you can get a sense of what this is going to sound like. This beautiful opening track where, again, with Tom getting older, his vocal range is starting to get limited and stuff, but he's able to do more stuff falsetto and to control that falsetto more.
Yeah.
You can hear in the live work that it's getting tired at that time, because you just also toured King of Limbs. And then right from here, Amok goes straight into that. Then he took a big break after that, which was good. He needed that.
Yeah.
And we'll get on more of that in a little bit. But my God, like Amok, the whole like, I don't even know where, like, every song on here is good. Default, so, like, just the synth.
Let me try my best with here to, like, make this somewhat timely.
Go.
Engineer is, like, the lead single from it, and you have, like, the music, well,
what is characteristic now? I remember you never, you thought I was pronouncing it wrong, like, it's Engineer, dude. You're like, no, it's Engineer. I'm like, it's Engineer. It's a really weird
No, I never pronounced it Engineer, but it was the difference between Engineer and Engineer,
So, no, someone else said Engineer, and I was like, it's not Engineer,
you idiot. It's definitely not a hard, it's a soft G. Yeah, that was a lead single. It starts off a number of a series of videos where Tom York is just doing random dances.
Don Chorus, I'm looking at you.
There's Lotus Flower. Stand up, please. Anyways, but like, you get a lot of really cool things in that drop. There's just this very fast-paced sort of like laser focus. It's almost
the
like
the baseline of drop is
it's
amazing.
It's almost like I would consider drop to be like early hyperpop, but if you mixed it with like deep house, I don't know, like not deep house, but like deeper like bass sounds.
Yeah,
because it's like just as hyperpop and all together. Unless was a really cool thing. I thought Stuck Together Pieces and Judge Jury Executioner were like sleeper, like dark horse candidates for really good songs. It really helped.
I love Stuck Together Pieces. I listened to that so much in high school, man.
Yeah.
Reverse Runny is a good song too. And A Muck at the End is my favorite Addison Peace song. It's either this or Dawn Chorus is my favorite Thom Yorke like releases, because Amok I have listened to, it's, I remember looking back at my iTunes history and it was Where I End and You Begin and Amok were my two most listened songs of all time.
It's
ever.
That baseline.
It's not just the baseline, because live, halfway through, you get this eruption of a guitar along with the bass line that is just beautiful. Watching it live a year and a half ago, I literally got goosebumps. When I heard that they're starting, I was like, oh my God, I'm finally going to hear a Muck live. And then just hearing the guitar just eruptures, just beat along with the bass. It is.
Yeah, because I imagine it probably replaces the synth from the recording.
Yeah, it goes do, 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 do. Because, yeah, the live version of it's a bit different. But just the live recording, too, you have all of that synth and stuff in there. It's just,
yeah.
Perfection. Bippity-boppity.
Amok ended really nicely, just to kind of like wrap up the whole thing. And like, it's weird. Amok was meant to be kind of like The Eraser 2.
Yes.
But it took on the soul of all of the collaborators from the live version of The Eraser and became like part of their thing too. Like, the bass lines and Ingenue and Drops and Stuck Together Pieces, Judge Jerry. It's such a Flea thing. Yeah. Like, Flea's like probably my favorite bassist of all time, like inspires me as a bass player. So like, just God bless on that. But the drums are particularly like not Radiohead in the sense like they're constantly skipping around and doing weird things. Like, they can do it in a 4-4 time, but they're glitchy. It's fun. You're messing around the percussion. It's really just like a star. Like this is the example you make of an alternative supergroup album.
Yes.
Really good.
And after Addison for Peace project from Amok, Thom released another project about...
A solo project.
A true solo project about a year after, called Tomorrow's Modern Boxes, where Thom said, basically, I'm bored, I'm on a laptop doing Damon Albarn shit, and made a whole record on it. And it is really experimental out there. Tomorrow's Modern Boxes. I love it, though. It is really... After, like... When I first listened to it, I liked it a lot, but I didn't understand it until maybe even 3-4 years after it released, I really understood it, man.
Tomorrow's Modern Boxes, continuing a Radiohead-ish sort of, I guess, tradition, it was released in a very weird way.
This
was a legally
torrent. I had to torrent this fucker. That's right. Yeah. I almost broke my computer doing this.
So you had to... This is not going to be the episode where I explain torrenting.
No, please. But we had torrent. I forgot this.
Yeah, you can't... Okay, I'll only say this. You can't just download a file from a computer somewhere.
No.
You have to rely on other people hosting that file on their computer. And the more people hosting that file, the stronger your download is.
Correct.
At least originally. Now, of course, you can just listen to this on streaming services like normal. But, like, it actually broke some records, because... This is a way for Thom Yorke to avoid the streaming services until
just
he really
like
had to on his own
stuff.
Terms. It was a paid-for BitTorrent bottle, so a lot packet bundle. So a lot of people torrented the hell out of it, like illegally, but a lot of people did legally, and it was actually downloaded over 1 million times within the first 6 days of its release, and was the most downloaded legal torrent of 2014.
Which
by February 2015, it had been downloaded 4.5 million times.
Which is insane.
Yeah.
And it's a really out there album, to say the least. It starts with a brain in a bottle. The music video is hilarious because Tom's like glitching, boxing around. Like,
this is why I said this is No Surprises 2.0.
Thank you. him just exploring every electronic thing he can possibly do. It's just, but it's brilliant is the funny thing. Ironically, Tomorrow's Modern Boxes is also the name of the group of Tom, Nigel Godrich, and Tarek, the visual artist that does all of the visual aspects of Thom Yorke Live, that they started doing live shows in 2019, which I did see live, but more on that in a little bit. But not to get confused with the two, and I talk about that later.
Yes. You got, like, Guess Again Interference, and this is just, like, a very, well, I guess... If you could possibly say that The Eraser and Amok were Thom Yorke dipping his toes into electronic, this is him, Jim Morrison screaming, jumping into the pool into electronic music, right? Like, this is just all in.
Front diving with clothes on, bleach blonde hair doing that. The fun thing interference is you had an app you can download where it was like a interactive app with interference. I remember downloading this on my iPhone at the time, but fuck Apple now, of me like clicking, like doing little dots and stuff of different boxes appearing and different really weird Thom Yorke sounds popping up. And I'm like, what the hell is this?
That was the era where, like, every alternative music band released a weird app with their album.
Yeah.
Like, I remember Gorillaz had, like, a Spirit House app where you could basically augment reality, the Saturn's Bars house, into your, like, thing. It was really
strange.
I don't
want to see Murdoch's knob in my face. But anyways, pause.
Once a face. Obligatory once a face.
After that, you have The Motherlode, which is my favorite track on Tomorrow's Modern Boxes. Again, another track I listened the dog shit out of when it came out. Oh my god. The beautiful, like, drum beat, synth beat that it goes it actually sounds really inspired a lot from Johnny Gruno on Videotape and a lot of Johnny's synth. So I wonder if they kind of got together on that track. I wouldn't be surprised and put it past them because you can really hear that influence on that as well. But my god, what a track.
Yeah, even just like the piano that acts sort of like as the backing bass, it's really nice.
You have Truthway after that, which is a little bit slower. And then you get to God. You get to God tier. There's no ice in. A track that Dan and I have bonded over many times at Berkeley or whatever. We'd just be like bored out of our minds. I just looked at him like, there's no ice in.
It's just the most ridiculous, like, weird experimental song. Like, even for Thom Yorke, it's like, buddy, come on. But
it slaps.
Yeah, it really does. Anytime. I'll be at a restaurant sometime and like the ice will have melted in my drink and I'll just go, there's no ice.
Or sometimes you go in the ice fishy back, we don't have ice today, there's no ice. I'm like, there's no ice.
It's just ridiculous. It's really good. We didn't get to see too much of Tomorrow's Modern Boxes live, sadly.
Until they actually started to, which I'll get to in a second.
Right.
Because I did see No Ice in Live.
I'm sorry, the Universal we. Sean's better than us. And Sean and Ben.
I am fucking better than everybody.
You got to see Tomorrow's Modern Boxes live.
But then moving on, we have his last solo project, which came out in June of 2019, was Anima. We reviewed this. It won my Album of the Year award in 2019. It is, I think, the most complete thing that Tom has produced really himself. The Eraser, yes, is really good, but Anima to me is a whole thing of all of the different creative projects and juices flowing in that one man's insane brain come together into one part and is very, very well done. Because you have also on top of that, you also have it go along with the short film that Paul Thomas Anderson made on Netflix, and it goes along with that whole kind of theme that goes along with it. And the more I've listened to this album, the more I've gotten into it again as well. It's just like Tomorrow's Modern Boxes, where it's just taking a little bit of time because there's so much different sounds in there. You have Traffic. You have Last I Heard, he was circling the drain. You have Twist, 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 which is one of my favorite tracks on there as well. Twist, 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 Twist,
Twist was a really like interesting, like, and we were just like dancing to it all the time.
There's two songs in one with Twist that kind of goes into it, which I did talk about a lot in the podcast. You have Dawn Chorus, which is probably my favorite Tom York track ever.
Yeah. Just as you were saying, it culminates everything he's done over his career. You're really good at that.
Yeah, it's either this or Muck. It's really, really hard. With Dawn Chorus, it's this beautiful love poem that goes back and forth, and it keeps the theme is like, if you do it all again, and that keeps just rolling around.
If you could do it all again, yeah, without a second thought, I don't like leaving. The door shut.
Seen it live though, because instead of having that weird synth keyboard in the background on the album version, on the live version, he's just playing a simple piano, and it's just him with this beautiful background that Tarek puts on of this different light show and stuff, and then it's just kind of like a small synth out of the background of almost like a choir, and then you have the birds chirping in the background because that's a literal dawn chorus.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. I mean, you can really get the rest of the review on the podcast if you'd like. You can go find that.
Episode... Good my. Give me a moment to find it.
Yeah. Because it'll be a little bit.
Yeah. But I believe... Yeah. Anyways, it was really...
That was his last project, and it's kind of like the last Radiohead thing we've had come out. And all of them, every single member has... basically contributed to some type of solo work, whether it be themselves or the different groups or within each other, and they all have some type of influence within the band and how the band has evolutionized to where it is today, and especially the live. I think that has the most contribution to the live shows itself, because when you see it live, you get a sense of how much each individual musician puts into the band and how they go as a collective. So Yeah.
Animal was in episode 102.
102.
That was our Animal review, so you can definitely check out the full thing there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, all of those full projects, all of the efforts they did separately, especially in their later years of Radiohead, helped to create a band that is constantly refreshing themselves, yes, even in their latter age.
As they like to say, we get better with age.
Yes, yeah, like fine wine. Literally was also
it is like,
so. Last question. I've become such a jank. Wow. While we have recording space and while we have time, Radiohead, we predict maybe one more album coming out of them.
Yeah.
What do we think would be coming from it? Like, sound wise, do you think it'll be like a continuing, they're going to experiment more, or do you think it'll be something to land the plane, so to speak?
They're gonna experiment more. There's no way they're going to try and land the plane. They're always pushing. They're always doing stuff. If they're not pushing, then they don't care. They've had that before where they've almost quit the band before because they didn't want to make the same record twice. They've had that issue with Kid A, with Amnesiac, where they're, or even Hail the Thief, where like, what are we going to do after? Once they find that envelope to push more, then that's what they create the best, and that's what they like doing themselves. So I could see one more in them and then just kind of go within their solo stuff after that, because it's just too hard with them kind of being scattered all over the place and within all their other commitments. But I really would like one more.
Fair enough. Yeah, I think we'll probably get maybe one more. But even if we don't, that's like been...
If not, then I'm just glad we saw him live. Yeah.
Yeah. We've talked about a lot now in over three hours worth at least about Radiohead, but so much so over the entirety of the podcast about this band and their importance. And it's like setting an example for how to best... like you said, never get bored with their sound, continue doing what they're doing and making it better, upping their craft and finding ways to improve their craft together and yes, apart. It's a really great story of music and just music and musicians at their best. So thank you for checking out this bonus episode of Audioface. Really quickly, plugs, check us out on Twitter and Instagram at AudiofacePod, youtube.com/AudiofacePod. Subscribe to us on all the things, like us on all the things, tell people about this podcast so that we spread
tell
the word
Radiohead
about it.
Tell Radiohead fans and fake Radiohead fans.
Yeah, tell them all to listen to this. It's really good. And our usual Audioface episodes are we reviewing music news every single week and reviews every single week. And so we'll be returning to that next week. But check out these bonus episodes because we goes in, as you can tell.
Yes.
So, I don't have like a Radiohead particular goodbye for this, but bye.
once again, I am alone with my friends. There you go.
There we go.